give me a heads up next time.
Hands up. You caught heads up. Welcome back. Oh, we have Baruch Hashem. We have what's that? A Purim hat you're wearing?
Yeah,
what's going on? Mishalitnas Adam Abim Besimcha. Wow. Okay, gentlemen, today is a very fascinating Shavuot, and I have to say that when we quoted these last few tshuvot of the Besamim Rosh, I don't know if you realize he actually threw out basic Yiddishkeit, endless sugyas. He did it in a way that when you look at it, you think, gee, this is lamdanud. Now, with the tefillin, it's unbelievable. If we take the Besamim Rosh at face value, none of us basically should be putting on tefillin, because it's not shayach that a male is not a bal keri unless we go to mikveh every day, like a chabatnik, and it means we're totally exempt from tefillin. And it's pshat in the Gemara. I mean, it's revolutionary. Now, I have to say that I think David Pardo gave me this from Hirurim, that's Rabbi Gil's student. So he has an entire article here with sources that there were periods when Jews did not put on tefillin. I'll tell you, I can't say I'm an expert in this field. In other words, I never researched it thoroughly. I always thought that the sources referred to the fact that Jews stopped wearing tefillin all day. It didn't mean they didn't put on tefillin for basic davening. But it's an interesting article. But one thing is for sure, that following the period of the Rishonim, the end of the Rishonim, certainly the Ashkenazic Rishonim, I'll tell you where the Jews had problems, and this takes us back to a question that is with us until today. Whenever we were exposed to the big world, a certain percentage fell away. And you see that in the Golden Age, the Golden Age of Spain. In other words, you don't even realize this, but in Israel, if you read the Maariv on Friday, the Aryeh Deri's Tigers, the group around him, is organizing a new party, the Svadenfeld Second at Best, second rate. And they want to have a party and they want to show they're as good as anyone. And yes, it's true, when I came in Aliyah, the Ashkenazim looked down upon the Eitzot HaMizrach. The Ashkenazim are more civilized, and they, what are they? They came out of the ghetto, what do they know? The truth of the matter is that the Spanish, Portuguese Jews, until today, look down upon the Ashkenazim, because they come from the Golden Age in Spain, where the greatest Rabbanim were world scholars, world medical doctors. We don't have to go any further than Maimonides. And we don't have to go any further than Maimonides. And they look down on the Ashkenazim. But there we find already, if you take the Akedat Yitzhak with Yitzhak Arma, you'll find recorded cases of leaving Torah, of being mezalzel in Torah. And it's not any different than today. It's you talk about tefillin, you talk about Shabbat, you talk about sexual standards. There's a tshuva in the Akedat Yitzchak. I mean, it's not a tshuva. He tells a story in his Perish on Stomu Gemara. I don't want to go into great detail, but I remember I discussed this with the Rav. Why did I discuss it with the Rav? Because one of the most shocking questions I ever got was in Michala, the Foreign Students Division, the early 70s. And, you know, I was young and naive. It's not the world of today. And a girl shows me a letter she got from America. Her girlfriend is on a college campus. Anyway, the gist of the letter was that maybe single girls should go to mikvah. And I have to go into more detail. And that way you avoid an isekarite. So I did my research. And I found that the Akedat Yitzchak with Spain, there was the same problem. And I also found out that my answer was correct. I answered the girl that if single girls start going to mikveh, it's the end of the sacredness of Yiddishkeit, the foundation of the family, all of love, the whole concept of love and marriage is gone. And Mori Rebbe said to me, you can can quote me and you can tell people I agree with you not 100%, but 200%. And the Akedat Yitzchak says that that's Stomu Gemori. He goes into a whole pshat that what was the greatness of Stomu Gemori? They wanted to live like the letter of the law. And sometimes when you live by the letter of the law, you destroy the whole spirit, the whole concept. And that's his whole pshat there. You should look at it. Of course, the Gemara is in the Sanhedrin, etc. Anyway, when the Besomim Rosh wants to abolish Tefillin, look what he's doing. Coming in with Frumkeit and abolishing Tefillin. None of us should be putting on Tefillin. Okay, we saw that last week. We also saw last week an amazing Shiva that threw out a tremendous sugya in Sanhedrin, a sugya that is Perikei of Hilchot Yesodei HaTorah, a sugya that we spent so many months on in our classes on response literature during the Holocaust, and he simply negates the entire vision of Yehoreg V'Al-Yavah, that for the three cardinal sins, Yehoreg V'Al-Yavah, and he comes out that you need a Beis Din, you need a Psak of Beis Din. No, we all were raised on the Medrash of Chanu Banecha. It's more than a Medrash. The references the Gemara with the three, what was it, the 300 boys and girls on the boat who committed suicide, the Gemara in Gittin, Hanazakin. And who asked the Shiloh? They asked the Shiloh whether God will save them from the sea, whether they'll have Olam Haba. But no one asked the Shiloh, Yarek V'Al-Yavah, Yarek V'Al-Yavah, three cardinal sins. It's Barabim, it's Bishat HaShmad, you have to give your life. All right, fine. According to the Besomim Rosh and Agatmet, and he has the chutzpah to attach the question to who answered it, and he gives a name, what was it, Yaakov ben Machir, that none of us know who he's talking about. But the name sounds very legitimate, because Rashi's Rebbeim had similar names, and he says that this name is mentioned in Tshuvat HaRashba, in the Kasana, the Hasana. He gives a super commentary on his falseness, and he says, while we don't really know who this person is, but his name is mentioned in Tshuvat HaRashba, and then he tells the story that before the Ramban went in Aliyah, and look who we're talking about, the Ramban. I mean, we can argue from today to tomorrow, pardon me for the analogy, but Yitz Rubin once gave me a watch, a gift. 2/3 of that watch is gone. That watch was, who was the greatest center fielder, Mays, Mantle, or the Duke, who died last week, Snyder? No, you can argue, Lahavdil, from today to tomorrow, who was the greatest Rishon? Maimonides or Nachmanides? You can quote the Rav from today to tomorrow, Danny, and you can wind up with the Rav saying Maimonides, the Rav saying Nachmanides. And he has the chutzpah that this Rav Yaakov ben Machir is arguing with the Ramban, and then the Ramban kisses him and says, you're right, and without a Beis Din, without smicha, ish mipi ish, you cannot have a sucked in today of Yehoreg V'Al-Yavah. No, you go tell that to the Rishonim. If you recall the Bayit Chadash I quoted on the Beis Yosef, in the Beis Yosef, HaRav HaShoychet, HaRav HaMoneya, you go and tell that to the 93 Beis Yaakov girls. So here you have unbelievable statements, Ivigedek mit Frumkeit, covered with learning and Frumkeit, and La Halacha, throwing out a good deal of Yiddishkeit. All right, ready to go further. I'm giving Rabbi Rubin a gift. Can you play an audio? Okay, this gift is going to cost you $1 million on the IOU list, and tomorrow I want you to tell the class whether I gave you a bargain. Okay? I've never given you a gift like this. I fainted when I heard it. And no one will appreciate it more than you. You'll understand why. Although I appreciate it almost as much. I appreciate it 98%, and Rabbi Rubin will appreciate it 100%. But remember, 1 million to the IOU list. You got to show respect for your Rebbe. Okay. Tomorrow you tell me whether it was worth it. Do you want to know something else, kids? If I wanted, I can zich machen a Rebbe, the maple with his Rebbe. I don't know, lately the Ruach HaKodesh, I was driving home from Grus on Friday. In my mind, I'm thinking, who am I going to give? I made three copies, okay? One I gave to Sam Dershowitz, okay? And I say, I have to give Yitzchak, he's going to go crazy. As I'm thinking of Yitzchak giving it to you, who do I see sitting on the bench with the flowers and the challahs? Dengst, I waved to you Friday from the car. That was the minute. I'm an idiot. Why didn't I think of Mashiach Tzidkenu? That's what I should have thought of. I'm going to give it to Mashiach Tzidkenu.
That's
what I'm saying. I'm on a streak with Ruach HaKodesh. Wow. If I take myself seriously, gentlemen, I am in real trouble. Baruch Hashem, I quote my Rebbe, the Rav said, Chodnish kein Ruach HaKodesh. I guarantee it. If the Rav said it, mi anochi. Okay, gentlemen, a lot of people have asked me, it's amazing the echo that these lectures have had all over the world. First of all, I only hope someone will listen to me and do a doctorate. Secondly, just going off the topic for 1 minute, people have stated in public, why doesn't Aaron Rakef do a work on Rabbi Belkin? They don't understand. I am prejudiced. In my new book, you'll understand, I describe Rabbi Belkin. I can't do a doctorate. I can't do a perfect study of someone I knew. I call upon someone who never knew Rabbi Belkin to research. And then he can interview me and interview others who knew him. It would be fabulous. I plead with anyone listening, the time has come to do a doctorate on Rabbi Belkin. On Rabbi Revel, I did my job, but I never met Rabbi Revel. I had no prejudice. Fine, Rabbi Silva, I met twice, but I described my new book, you'll see. But I didn't know him. But Rabbi Belkin, the Rav, I can't do a definitive study. It's much too early, and I'm much too prejudiced. So I did something else on the Rav, which I hope 100, 200 years from now, whoever will do the definitive work will benefit. But on Rabbi Belkin, we need a young man. With the cleaves get... With, not the Kriegsgap, where I'm thinking of my masters, pardon me. With the B'Samim Rosh, it awaits now a doctorate. In other words, it has to be filled out with secondary literature. But the question that everyone asks me, how did he pull it off? You know, some people, first of all, can't believe a great Talmud Chacham. Believe me, I have a problem too. But he's not the first one. We've had literary forgeries, and we've had great Talmid Chachamim. And if you lived in Israel as long as I have, you see the way people play games with the halacha, what's gone on recently with Geirut, with Rav Shmuel Vuzner, with Rav Yashiv, with Rav Ovadia Yosef. You can quote Rakefet. I don't want to mention Rav Ovadia Yosef in the same sentence with anyone else, because he is the posek hador who is heads and shoulders above anyone else. But you see, the newspapers, the Falschkeit, the B'Samim Rosh had an axe to grind. He had no YU. He had no Chovavei Torah. He had no Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein to turn to. Just think what I'm saying. He was locked in. His cousin was the Noldeb Yehuda. His father was a Rav of the old school. His brother was the first chief rabbi of London, totally of the old school. And he was already caught up in the new world of the birth of Mendelssohn, the birth of the Maskilim, the birth to a certain degree of scientific Jewish scholarship, although its real thrust comes a little bit after him. And he's caught up in this world, and he's choking. He doesn't have a way to express himself. And you have to appreciate that, because I've had so many students, right-wingers, left-wingers, everyone has their choice. I was moved at the Kotel. Two of my students from this very Kotel came over to me to wish me a Shabbat Shalom. One is a right-winger and one is a left-winger. I don't want to mention their names. Both Rabbanim of Kehilat and both Rabbanim that I know inside out. And each one of them, I once told them off, I went into his office, endless pictures of big Rabbanim with long beards and payas. I said, you have a lot of Balabatim who don't relate to this. Put up a picture of a few guys without beards, without payas, Gedolei and Rabbi Lichtenstein. Called Gadol B'Yisrael. He can learn better than a lot of your other people. I gave him Musa. The other guy I gave Mr. Wright here in class, quoting, remember, and he wrote to me that I misquoted him because he was misquoted in the article. But he says, Rebbe, I'm listening to you very seriously. So I was very moved. You have choice today. I don't say kiblu et dati, and I don't say I'm right. I say I have a valid opinion, but I try to live with the Rebbe's image in front of me. But you have choice. The Besom and Rosh had no choice. Now, how did he do it? How could he fake out everyone, publish the Sefer, and people, until today, people take it totally seriously. A mere yeshiva boy said to me, you mean it's all false? I said, no. This was his greatness. Why did he call it Besom and Rosh? Do you remember what I told you last August? What is Besom in Gematria? 392, am I correct? Add it up. Besom Mim Rosh. 392 in Gematria. Right. He had 392 different Shuvat. Correct. The majority were totally normative. Let me use the word normative as the correct word. Totally normative. Nothing wrong with them. Shuvat that you will have in the rabbinate. Questions like this time and again. And he paskin the way most of us would paskin, the totally normative. And that's what I want to spend, if not the whole shiur, the first part of this shiur, give you an example, a medley, an overture, a selection of tshuvot that you will see there is so much in the Besom and Rosh that you got to look with a candle to find the firecrackers. The firecrackers are there. The minefield is there. But there is so much normative that a big Talmud Chacham looking at some of these tshuvot, was is shlech, what's wrong? He's right on. Besom and Rosh Ayin. No. The whole problem of who is the chazan for Yom Narayim. You gentlemen, this is a problem we have every day in the American rabbinate outside of the big cities. I saw this in Florida, in Hollywood, Florida. I couldn't believe my eyes. This guy davening as good as we know how to daven, backwards and forwards. Well, I see the person I'm with, gives him Shalom Aleichem, how are you? Are you coming over to eat tonight? You want to eat with us? No, my wife, we got to go. So I asked him afterwards, who is that guy? There's a yeshiva guy, went to RJJ, grew up in New York, lives in Fort Lauderdale. Fort Lauderdale to Hollywood, none of us could walk it. Maybe, I have one grandson here, he could walk it. There are reasons why. Outside of my grandson, none of us are in that shape. How many tzamchanim are in the room? Who got a sichat lochem on Friday? Only one person sitting here. He can walk it. I can't. Yitzchak can't. Menachem can't. Michael can't. He drives the shul. I asked him, he drives the shul. This is a young Israel. It's the year 2011. There are 800 members all Shomer Shabbos. No, he loves an Orthodox shul. He can't take Chabad. There is Chabad in Fort Lauderdale. And he can't take Reform. He can't take Conservative. Lahavdil between Chabad and the others. This is the shul he loves. And my student invites him occasionally. He should stay. Friday night dinner. He sings Miris. And I heard the guy daven. Wow. No? Now during the week he has Yahrzeit. He wants to daven for a moment. What do you say? It's a problem. I had the problem all the time in my shul. Of course they daven for the Amid. If I wouldn't let these people daven for the Amid, we wouldn't have Balei Tefillah. We were just the beginning shul with barely, at first, not even a minion of Shomer Shabbos. But these were all old-timers from Newark for some gekent good davening. This is a real problem. Tell me, who raises this problem and writes about it in golden letters? Chaim. No, Rebbe. Of course, it goes back with shilas, with shaving, with wine, with machal. No, who analyzes it in golden letters? My classmate, what do you call him? Dr. Grach. Dr. Gaon Reb Chaim Soloveitchik. Dr. Grach. I call him Rabbi Dr. Professor Chaim Soloveitchik. Rupture and Reconstruction. Remember his article about Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur in Boston? That these people were Machal Shabbos, who was Shemesh Shabbos. But when it came Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, they davened better, with more kavana than all the yeshiva boys put together. Because the yeshiva boys, let's take Torah Shraga, let's take the Kollel, 50% are Balei Tshuva today, wherever you go. In South Africa, I just spoke with them. I have a lot of invitations that I can't accept at this moment, but I'm very moved by all the people who want to hear Aaron Rakepit speak. But you talk about South Africa, 90% of the Frum Jews, and they're a very strong component of South African Jewry today, 90% of Balei Tshuva. No? What do we know how to daven? Where did we see davening? All these old timers in Boston have noch gedavened in the Alte Heim. They grew up in Poland, they grew up in Litva, they grew up in White Russia, they grew up in the Ukraine. They knew how to daven. Their great grandchildren are all Balei Tshuva. Their great grandchildren learned in Asameach, in Machon Meyah, in Eish HaTorah, in who knows where the grandchildren learned. Tzaddikim. To daven like the great grandparents? Absolutely not. See, it's Chaim makes that point. It's a golden, golden point. It is so true. If you've lived the era, it is absolutely shocking. Chaim's article is genius. You're all familiar with it, I trust. Rupture and Reconstruction. There was a lot of attack on it. I can give you a whole list of why. Because he makes it sound as if no one remained from in America. But that's not fair to Chaim. Percentage-wise, no one remained from. There were families that remained from. There was the Herman family. You have the Webermans. You have the Malachim. There were families. The Scheinberg family. We're talking before 1930. That's the cutoff point, before 1935. Reb Moshe Soloveitchik, of all the credit in the world, 5 children came to America with him. All 5 were from tzaddikim, dedicated. You got to give credit to Reb Moshe Soloveitchik. Of the Gedolei Yisrael came to America, I don't want to tell you what happened to their children. And the greatest names you can imagine. It doesn't matter. That was America. So Chaim makes a golden point. But this problem of a chazan is a problem we all face. Where does the halacha discuss it specifically? Yomim Narayim. Look into the Shulchan Aruch, look into the halacha, and you'll see for Yomim Narayim, you want to get a chazan who's married, who has a beard, who has a wife, who has children, who has da'agot panasa, who will daven with all his heart.
What's the source of the
Quran? You look, it's right there with the start of in Chelek Shishi of the Mishnah Brura. You'll look and you'll find it in a minute. I don't have it in front of me, but I don't want to start wasting time looking for Jeff.
So you're saying though that a guy that's not Shomer Shabbat couldn't drive drive to Shul on Shabbat to the lab. We have done it in regular days, but now there's no question allowed to. But in Yomim Noraim, now there's a question.
On Shabbos, I wouldn't let him be chazan, and depending on the week, it depends on the shul. It's not a black and white answer, because today we judge a Machal Shabbos that is a Tinuk Shenishba. But it depends where the shul is. Where I was the first Orthodox shul, maybe with South Orange, I had no choice. If I wouldn't let these people daven, we didn't have Balei Tefila. But if you have a young Israel, they may have rules that someone who's Machal Shabbos can't daven Fabi Yomit. In this particular young Israel, he told me when this guy has your sight, I let him daven. And I heard the guy daven. He davens no different than any other yeshiva graduate in America. He's an RJJ graduate, a Ken Good davening. I met people like this in Las Vegas, Chaim Berlin graduates, RJJ graduates, Teyer Das graduates. But the Risa Shabbos, they wouldn't let him in that shul for sure, in the young Israel. Where I was rabbi, certainly in the early 60s, we wouldn't let anyone daven from Ahmed on Shabbos. I couldn't make an issue out of it. But the question is Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. There the halacha says you need someone, if you recall the phraseology, has to have a beard. In other words, what is a beard a sign of? He's mature, he's pious. You fellas are good Jews. Don't look at the Rebbe. I see many beards sitting here. I want the people listening across the world, that the majority of my students sitting here, the overwhelming majority, Baruch Hashem, are sitting here with beards. It's the Rebbe who deserves to be rebuked and reprimanded. Take my word for it. But Baruch Hashem, I saw Gedolei Yisrael without beards. But today, it's, you know, your world, Mendafa ben Abad, and if you read Rabbi Riskin's memoir and all that's been written about it, you'll see what goes on with the fact that he does not have a beard. Anyway, B'Samim Roshayin, so he says, they asked me a question that for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, they have a wonderful chazan, and he's very learned, and he knows Keirish Kamilot. And now you know what that means. I have to tell you something out of my own life. What does it mean, Keirish Kamilot? You don't realize this. My grandfather, my father's father, came to America. He was maybe 15, 16 years old. I don't believe he understood most of what he davened. The only language he could speak was Yiddish. He never learned English. All he knew in Russian were some juicy curse words. When I did basic training in the army, I learned that those words were curse words, and I came to me, I used them very successfully in 1985 in Riga. Those curse words in Russian turned me into a hero. But that's a different story, not for now. It's not in my new book. That chapter, they condensed two chapters because they didn't want the book to go on to 600 pages. But okay, it's okay. It's not earth-shaking importance that the Rebbe knows how to curse in Russian. So my grandfather knew how to daven. It's Purim, you can laugh, it's okay. The class is laughing, they're laughing at the Rebbe has hana that his students are laughing at him, thank God. Now, gentlemen, my grandfather was an excellent Baal Tefillah. I don't think he knew most of the words. He never learned, he came to America. And I want to tell you, that grandfather was never, ever Mechalel Shabbos. He lived in America, he died well into his 80s, never Mechalel Shabbos. His wife, my grandmother, who I barely knew, she died at the end of a year and a half out of heartache, out of seeing what was happening to some of her children in America. She was a tzaddikah. But he didn't know Perish HaMilah. So here you have someone who knows Perish HaMilah. He's a Yorei Chet. He has a good voice. But he is not married and has no children. And they ask him, can we make him the chazan? And I guarantee you, there isn't a rav alive who wouldn't paskin the way he paskin. He says, Lachatkila, we look for someone that has all the midot. But that's shilsul bi'alma. To translate that, it would mean that's like a decoration. If we can't find someone with all these attributes, then certainly someone who's the Yorei Chet and knows Perish Hamila and can daven with feeling, with meaning, with tears, he can daven for the Amid. That's a normative answer. Right on, Labriut. And by the way, when you look into the Shulchan Aruch, you look into the Mishnah Berurah, you look into the Achronim, everyone says the same thing. Lachatchila, we seek. B'dieved, we don't have. I can tell Rabbi Rubin something of interest to him, that 1 year in Maplewood, the early years, the young shul didn't have a lot of money. I brought in a chaver of mine, someone I had learned with and was very friendly with, Chaim Gold. He was not yet married. He was a single bacha, but he knew how to daven. He had Yiret Shemayim. He knew Perish HaMilot. He was studying for Smicha. he was the Baal Tefillah that year in at Beth Ephraim Maplewood Jewish Center. Okay, interesting. Tshuva, that's Ayin. Tshuva, Ayin, Aleph. Very fascinating question. Gentlemen, do you say Avinu Malkeinu on Shabbat when it's Yom Kippur? No? You want to close the door, please, Mendel? You know how much ink has been spilt on this question? He brings down from the Gaonim, a whole machloket ha-Gaonim. Do you say Avinu Malkeinu on Shabbat? What's the Shaila? No, Avinu Malkeinu, Shabbat. How are you allowed to say Avinu Malkeinu? But if you don't say Avinu Malkeinu, how are you allowed to say Slichat on Yom Kippur? It goes hand in hand. We don't say Slichat on Shabbat. We don't say Tachlun Erev Shabbat. Isn't it Minig Yerushalayim that every 30 days, if you haven't been at the Kotel, you have to Rif Kriya? No, what do Yerushalmiyim do? When they haven't been at the Kotel 30 days, they come back to the Kotel on Erev Shabbat Lachatzorayim. Erev Shabbat, after Chatzot, no one rips Kriya anymore. It's Minig Yerushalayim. So you see, Shabbat has a Kedusha. What do you do? Avinu Malkeinu, Slichot. These are Tfilot. Chassidim don't even want to say them during the week. Have you ever davened in a Chassidic shtivel? They give out and have calendars with Yahrzeit every day, which I've seen this with my own eyes. And they have a Gabbai, Gittak Chlatz, the Yahrzeit in the Helik, and everyone No tachlin. The Rav, I have in my book, quoting the Rav, that why didn't the Hasidim want to say tachlin? Because tachlin is vachetik. And a Hasidish soul wants to feel Shabbistic. That's why the Hasidim keep Shabbos so much longer. They make a big sudashli shit. And I was once invited, there was a rabbi, Rabbi Shalom Dov Kowalski. So he invited me Saturday night to his home. Malka and I come in, and there's anything like it. The table with a white tablecloth, a feast is spread. Who can eat Saturday night? Shabbos, you eat all day. Candles are lit. Then I learned, this is Chassidish, this is a Malava Malka. They interviewed some Altamira from Shanghai. It was written up recently. And they asked them, what was Saturday night like in Mir? I said, what are you talking about? We heard Abdullah, we went back to the yeshiva, opened up our gemaras. You didn't have a Malava Malka? A what? Who heard of a Malava Malka? Well, you understand? This was Mir. But Chassidish. And these are the very words he uses. It's Vachadik. How can you say Avinu Malkeinu Slichat Mishabbat? So he calls Machlekes HaGoyim. Anyway, Halacha L'maisa, what do we do? What we do is very fascinating. We say Slicha, that we don't cut out. We don't say Avinu Malkeinu. When do we say Avinu Malkeinu? When Yom Kippur falls on Shabbat? Yeah. At Ne'ilah. Ne'ilah technically already is basically after Shabbat. It's after sunset. It's after Shabbat. That's when we say Avinu Malkeinu. So here he paskins l'alacha. He says, in my where I was rabbi, the Summer Rav says, I tried to get them to stop saying Avinu Malkeinu. I could not. They wouldn't listen. So he says, you try to stop them, and if you can, then don't make an issue out of it. Hakavana hatova. Ikarit be elu ha in your name. And boy, that is a very sagacious answer. It's the way people feel. You can't stop Shulman Hug. That's the famous story with the Rav that my good friend Aaron Akefit writes up, my revered friend Reb Heschel Schechter writes up. We heard it from the Rav. And you know the story with the Bichat Kahanim. When the Rav came to Boston, you know, the Rav was a young man. He made plenty of mistakes. And believe me, he understood the rabbinate better than any other gadol because he had been in the rabbinate, wasn't the rabbinate. So I remember he used to tell us, don't be stupid the way I was, he said. And he told the following story, how he comes into the shul and it's Rosh Hashanah falls, Yantar falls on Shabbos, whatever it could be, Pesach, Sukkot. No, do you have Birkat Kohanim? Logically speaking, why don't you have Birkat Kohanim on every Shabbos? During the week, Tichat Tzibura. By the way, the Dr. Mizrach, Gili, do you have Birkat Kohanim where you come from?
I go to
National School. Ah, you're Ashkenazi. Godies. No wonder they marry Ashkenazi, but they boast Lakula that they're spazim. The only thing you can't get out of is glatt kosher. That's the killer. You follow me? I quote Rebbe. Rebbe said that chumra of the Beis Yosef makes up for all his kulas. You understand? Because in Poland, Litva, whoever heard of glatt kosher? But today, the OU only gives an OU with glatt kosher because the Svadim and the Ungarisha drive them crazy.
What about Rabbeinu Tam Shabbat?
Well, Rabbeinu Tam. Say that. Zayn gives an all you intermarried Svadim. You take the best of both worlds. Baruch Hashem. Anyway, I'll deal with it halachically in great depth, but not now. But coming back here, so the rug, why don't you do it on Shabbos? So we don't minig in the chutzlach, don't do it on Shabbos, because the Jew he's not shirui b'simcha. In order to do it, you have to have simcha, happiness. No, you're growing up in Moscow, you're growing up in New York, you're growing up in Boston, you're growing up today in London, the most anti-Semitic country in the world. You're growing up in Paris, in the pretzel, a Jew can't even walk on the kippah in public. What's going on in the world today? No, there's no simcha. But on Yontif, the simcha overcomes the depression. No, if Yontif falls on Shabbos, it's a kal v'chomer. How do you say that in English? A fortiori. That's Sansino's language. It's a kal v'chomer. If you duchen on Yontif in the Gola, you certainly have to do it when Yontif falls on Shabbos. You'll go into 50% of American shuls. When I was growing up, it was 80%. Duchen on Shabbos? Machalos Shabbos, what are you talking about? And the Rav made a big fight. He was a young man with a brisker temper like his namesake. He was not like Reb Chaim, he was like Reb Yosef Dov. It's very fascinating. Different personalities. They say Reb Baron Soloveitchik was like Reb Chaim in his personality. And the Rav was like Reb Yosef Dov, for whom he's named. He started yelling and crying, so they duchen. After they duchen, Yontif was over, Shabbos was over, they held a meeting, and they informed Rabbi Soloveitchik he's never to enter that synagogue again. Period. So the Rav said, you don't make issues, you try to educate over the years to explain with lumpus. He was talking about the problem of when Shabbos ends and why people get upset when the rabbi waits too long and how to deal with it. So that's exactly what he paskins. He says, if you can explain to them why they shouldn't say Avinu Malkeinu on Shabbos, and they will listen fine. If they insist, their father said Avinu Malkeinu, their grandfather said Avinu Malkeinu, their great-grandfather said Avinu Malkeinu on Shabbos, you're not going to budge them, let them be. The Iker is the Kavanah. You don't go to war over Avinu Malkeinu on Shabbos. Very interesting, very fascinating Shukla. Okay? No one will argue with him. And he quotes Gaim, I don't want to go into all the details here, but you can do a whole nice paper going into the Gaonic period when all this was engendered and see the way they dealt with Avinu Malkeinu. By the way, it's also interesting, the Ashkenazim have a much longer Avinu Malkeinu than the Eidat HaMizrach. How long is your Avinu Malkeinu? You're Davin Ashkenaz, so you're not going to be able to answer. But the Eidat HaMizrach have a lot less. They basically follow the Lashon of the Gemara in Tainit, and they don't have all the additions that we have. Okay. Now, another problem that comes up. A Brit on Yom Kippur.
Which Simon is this?
This is Simon Ayin Bet. And here I'll show you the Shulchan Aruch already. But this is a very fascinating shaila. And I've seen many times, when do you make the bread? When do you make the bread? And remember, Yom Kippur is a very long davening. Shabbos, generally speaking, when there's a brit, they make the brit after davening. It's not part of the service. But Yom Kippur, if you're going to make the brit after davening, you can wind up never making the brit at all, because chakras goes into Musa, Musaf into Mincha, Mincha into Ne'ilah. Not only that, with the Brit Milah, Vayashkem Avraham. All right? There's a special Hiddur Mitzvah, I would call it a Hiddur Mitzvah, to make the Brit as early as possible. Fine. You know, in Rus, the Brit is right after davening, about, generally speaking, 8:30, is Vayashkem Avraham. There's stories with the Safna Rebbe I've read, where they went and delayed the davening, so the Rebbe could be the Sanduk, and the Rebbe got very upset, and he said, make the Brit on time. I'll try to get there, I can't guarantee, but I have a Kabbalah to daven late, he says. You don't have that Kabbalah. Then he once gave an answer. He says, I try to daven on time, but what can I do? The Kabbalah overwhelm me, and it takes me time until Hasidim Rishonim 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 Achat Umbit Palalim. I don't know whether you should take the Rebbe at face value. Obviously, in all these Britot, the Hasidim waited for the Rebbe. But from a literature point of view, it's incorrect. By Yesh Kam Avram, you have to make the Brit early. So, and he deals with this very problem. Mila B'Yom Kippur, Ro'eh anisha yumalu li'acharei shachret kedei shelo yimshoch ha-mitzvah gadol chazot acha chatzot mirov ha-piyutim v'ha-tfilot. Well, am I right about Avinu Malkeinu?
I'm not sure.
How many? Pass it up.
Yeah, I think it's more or less the same, maybe the Sephardic one.
No, let me see the Sephardic one. The Ashkenazic one, I know, unfortunately, I've said Avinu Malkeinu too many times. No, there's less here. There's less. Take a look. 1, 2, you have 4 columns. Here, basically, you have 2 columns. It's half the size. I'm not off base. Okay, but to say that, no, they go back to the Mishnah. We added on during the time of the Crusades. We made additions. The Hasid, the Ashkenaz, added on to the Mishnah. That's what it amounts to. No, what he paskin is actually halacha lemaisa. Looking through the Shulchan Aruch, Siman Tav Reish Chaf Aleph Siv Katan Bet, the Mechaber paskins. Mila beveit haKnesset malin ben yotzel musaf acha kriyat haTorah uliacha chamila omrim ashrei. No, first of all, you have to ask a simple question.
What?
Tav reish chaf aleph sif katan bet. You have to ask a simple question. If you're worried about the davening taking too long, why not make the Brit Mila before Shachrit? So there may be a simple answer that the family can't get everyone together that early. But the Mishnah Berurah gives a very simple reason. Shachrit has to come first. Tadir v'sha'ena tadir kaidim. We daven Shachrit every day. We don't daven Musaf every day. A Brit Mila comes along. Doesn't come along every day. So it cannot knock out Shachrit. But it comes before Musaf. And the Ramah adds on, V'haminhag, our minig is Lamul Acharei Ashrei. That we make the Brit Milah not before Ashrei, but after Ashrei. Is there a basic reason for that? It has to be checked. I thought about it, and it could very well be because the Gemara says in Bracha, Kol Ha'om Ashrei Shalosh Pamim Biyom, gets Olam Haba, So it could be that the second ashray is tied in with the first ashray, that those two have to be together, and then you have discharged what you can do towards Tefillat Shacharit, and then you make the Brit Milah. And there's another question with the Brit Milah, which he doesn't discuss, but it's right in the Shulchan Aruch. What do you do with the Kol Shel Bracha? Mevarchin al Milah below Kols. That's what the Sfatim do. Ashkenazim, v'yeshumrim, the Mevarchim b'Kols, v'notnim letinak hanimol, v'chein no hakema. You look into the Mishnah Berurah on Yom Kippur, the tinok drinks twice. What do I mean he drinks twice? What is Minig Yisrael? We all do it, b'damayach hayi, you wave the cotton with the wine into the infant's mouth. Unfortunately, we're telling the infant that to be a Jew, at times, it cost us blood. It's a forerunner to what we spoke about on Monday. It's a forerunner to the Akedat Yitzchak. B'damayach hayi. But now, when you don't have an adult to drink from the coast, so the second time is on the Borei Priya Gafen, you give the Tinok Hanimo wine. It shouldn't be a bracha levatala. So this is a very normative psak. Ayin Gimel B'Samim Rosh gets involved here with one of the questions that shakes us to our very foundation in the year 2011. How much has this been written about as a result of the feminist revolution? Gentlemen, many of you are married. Do your wives shake lulav and etrog? Do they make a bracha? Do they run the shul to hear shofar? Leaving the children behind, the infants behind? The whole question. Do they study Torah? Do they make a bracha when they study Torah? Where do your daughters go to school? If they go to a Sephardic school following Rav Ovadia Yosef's Psakim, their davening is very different than an Ashkenazi davening. Baruch Sha'ama, Yishtabach, so much is left out. Technically, they have to cover their heads, even if they're not married, even if they're 9 years old or older. Am I right or wrong? According to Rabbi Vajra, I don't know if it's done. I doubt if it's done. Not always are we zeichet that everything we paskin is listened to. Rabbi Vajra, Asa's shaitels, they say members of his own family, some of the women wear wigs. But the davening, what a difference. Sfardiyot and Ashkenazi. Gentlemen, this is a basic machloket rishonim. The Chachmei Ashkenaz, Rabbeinu Tam, the Balei Tosfot, women may not be chayavot in mitzvot aseh she'hazman grama, but if they do the mitzvot, they can make a bracha. Chachmei Sfarad, led by the Rambam, women are not chayavot in mitzvot aseh she'hazman grama. If they wish, they can do the mitzvot, but they certainly cannot make a bracha. Look into Rav Shach, the Achiezer. You will find that this is one of the first questions he discusses in great detail, this machloket. And he has the same insight, the same chidushim, as Moriu Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik. Both of them reach the same analysis, that you see that women can create, according to the Ashkenazim, she creates a chepsa shel Torah. When she learns, when she does a mitzvah, that's why she can make a bracha. According to the Svadik Rishonim, you see that it's not the same as a man. The end result is different. It's not on that level. Yes, we let them do the mitzvah, but it's more or less, if you know the sugya with smicha, nachat ruach asu l'nashim, that they enable them to be some chod on a korban if they brought it. They're not mechuyavot, but it's nachat ruach. They shouldn't feel they're second-rate citizens. So you see, there's a basic difference in thought here and what the implications are. But what a fascinating question. And in B'Shemim Rosh Ayin Gimel, he tells a story, you see. Chacham Echad Balair. You fellas can't appreciate this. Today, every shul has a rabbi. In Europe, and evidently in the Sephardic world, that wasn't so. And they were on itinerant preachers. The Dubna Magid. There were other famous Magidim. You should know that our prime minister descends. His grandfather was a well-known Magid. There were the great Magidim. They went from city to city. No, a Magid comes from city to city. He advertently or inadvertently may many times throw a bomb. What do I mean advertently or inadvertently? I was coast to coast, and I spoke about my own Ashkafa that to me is so simple that one cannot have partnership in Yonim, and that if there's a rabbinic will, there's a halachic way, it's not Judaism. And, you know, I just said it openly, and people disagreed with me. Women wanted to exile me. I quoted the Rav. There were women, oh, he's just one opinion. My rabbi knows better than Rabbi Soloveitchik. Shocking. So I don't want to blame these magidim. You know, you don't know the audience when I teach in Griscola. I have to admit, I know da lifnei mi ata omei. So I know the audience. You come in, help the skelter, four corners of the earth. If I would be smart, Gili, I would never accept the topic about that it's public right now. You want Rakefet? Ask him to give a shir in some halacha from 100 years ago. Ask him to give a shir on the Cleves Get. Ask him to give a shir on the Vienna Get. Ask him to give a shir in Heter Agun and Rabbi Yisrael Chanan Svarim. Ask him to give a shir in Jewish history. Ask him to walk the streets of Mir with you, to walk the streets of Berlin with you, to walk the streets of Warsaw with you into the very Ishtiblach 100 years ago. That's what I should do. Contemporary issues, I leave that to Rabbi Rubin, Baruch Hashem. He can handle it. Or, we're raising young Rabbanim here, Rabbi Pardo, Rabbi Wolf. Oh boy, they're going to get involved then. Wow. So here, an itinerant Magid came into the city, and in public he gave her drasha that the women have to be careful to sit in the sukkah, to take luvel and etrog, and they have to make a bracha. And people went crazy. What are they talking about? This rabbi is insane. He's off the deep blue end. He's on the moon. Maito, vasreta, what's he talking about? And you got to know, my wife came from Chassidim on all sides. Women never sat in a sukkah. In Israel, they build sukkah terraces, little sukkahs. They'll tell you right away, it can hold 5-6 men. Women, they'll sit in the house. What's the problem? They'll sit in the living room next to the sukkah terrace. What? Lulav etrog? The one mitzvah that women were more machmirot on is shofar, for obvious reasons. Shofar, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, the shofar, Uru Yishenim, Mikadem Chem, how the Rambam describes it so beautifully in Ilchat Shuvah. There the women were more machmirat. But this rabbi came, so they you know, the summer Rosh, the scribes, they turned to the Rosh, and they asked him, what is with this man? He's insane. And he says, no, you got to understand, it's a machlekes rishonim. And he's absolutely correct according to the Rabbeinu Tam. And there's no problem with women, and it's not drachot lebatola, and there's no bar tosef. Avol b'makom she'ein mevarchim, v'af she'ein osim mitzvot elu klal, v'adai yoter tov, u'ledat ha'rambam zal, osrot levareich. Wow. So you see, this is a shaila from life. Normative psak, and ain hachinami. How many times I have had to answer this question, and I'll tell you better. You want to see where this question really comes up, and this is something I have seen men, women. My dear students, we are living in a generation of balei tshuva. You don't start to fathom what I'm saying because you can't understand what the Torah world was like 50, 60, 70 years ago. Maybe my good friend Rakefet's new book will help explain what it was like 50, 60, 70 years ago. Mizol de Levin, we should live to see and hold the book in our hands. But Shenente Vivaita. Fran, you know what that means? Excuse me?
It's nearer than further.
Further, but we have Gili Simchi. I want him to understand too. And I don't know how good Ephraim's Yiddish is. We have to give them a break. Yitzchak, these are real problems. It's a world of balei tshuva. One second. So when you talk about a world of balei tshuva, what do you do with a girl who's Moroccan? Her parents were totally irreligious. They left the Mela. They wound up in France. They wound up in Brooklyn. And they went the way of the Ashkenazim. And NCSY picks up the girl. And all her influence in NCSY is from Ashkenazim.
Moroccans
don't have Ashkenaz anyway.
Excuse me?
Moroccans don't have Ashkenaz anyway. No, but this is a serious question. The girl is taking lulav and etrog, making a bracha. The girl is making mitzvot asei shazman grama, she's making a bracha. And then she goes to Michlala, she starts learning, she listens to the YU Torah website, she picks up Shayurim, and she says, comes with a shayzer, all my life, my whole religion comes from Ashkenazim. Now I find out I'm a Moroccan. I don't want to go back. What do you do? Now take the mirror image of the Shiloh, which I've seen many times. I don't want to mention names. Prominent rabbis. Svadim Tahorim. Samech Pet. Svadi Tahor. You look at them, total Ashkenaz. They have an expression in modern Hebrew, Ashkenaz, like they were ruined. They weren't ruined. I asked one of these rabbis, very prominent position in South Africa. I said to him, you're a total Ashkenazi. Your name is Svadi, your looks at Svadi, your Hebrew is Ashkenazi, your religious observance is Ashkenazi, your mental state is Ashkenazi. He said to me, yes, the Shaila, and he explained, he said, my parents weren't from. I was picked up by South Africa, whatever, B'nai Akiva, Chabad, Eish HaTorah, tremendous outreach there. And they live B'Sholem. It's an amazing thing. They live B'Sholem. And everyone who influenced me was Ashkenaz. When I started learning and I realized their differences, I asked the Shaila, but by that time, I was totally Ashkenazized. They told me, remain an Ashkenazi. And by the way, I agree with that psak wholeheartedly. That's based upon the Ari HaKodesh. There are 12 different gates. And then there's the Shah HaKlali. And I'm the last one in the world that will say an Ashkenazi should live like a Sfadi or Sfadi. Each one has their own traditions. I understand it. But when a kid becomes frum, and his parents were, he made his parents frum afterwards. You follow? It's lehefech. You become your father's father. You become your mother's father. I know thousands upon thousands of cases like that. Without exaggeration, there are probably hundreds of thousands of cases like that. You have so many examples where the kids become frum, and I told you the story with the tefillin, remember? It's overwhelming. This Israeli, a northerner, finds out his grandfather, the Nazis, held a gun to him, throw your tefillin on the floor and spit at them or we'll shoot you. The grandfather refused, they executed him. So the grandson found out, he already was in his late 20s, decided that he was raised in an irreligious kibbutz, started to put on tefillin, knew from tefillin he came to seminars about Yiddishkeit. He came to Topol Yiddishkeit. His wife didn't want to go along, but love won out, and she became totally frum. Then his father said, I should be the sheikhs. My father gave his life for tefillin that my son puts on tefillin. And he became like the son. No. What do you do? It's a very, very interesting question. Baruch Hashem. L'chatchila, let an Ashkenaziyah be raised as an Ashkenaziyah. Let a Sfadiyah be raised as a Sfadiyah. But if people were made frum and this becomes their Mesorah, this is their Mesorah. Fine. No one goes back with these Mesorah to Moshe Rabbeinu. So Machlekes Rishonim. We're not dealing here with issues that we can say Halacha L'Moshe Misinai. Machlekes Rishonim. Okay. Beautiful, beautiful question, and totally, totally within
the
range. He says, let them do as they were taught. Don't make an issue out of it. Okay? No, he says, it's machlokes, he says, the rabbi who preached was telling you, Rabbeinu Tam Shita, it's probably the Ashkenazim, although it's written by the Rush, it's hard to tell. The Rush can be dealing with Ashkenazim, we're dealing with Sfadim. But he says, it's a machlokes Rishonim. Don't consider him a fool. Don't consider him chutz l'tchum. He makes sense.
What did the Rav do?
The Rav held like the Ashkenazim. What did he do? Did he have Sfadic girls in Maimonides? You tell me. I don't know. I don't know. Be interesting to know what the Rav did if you had a Sfadic girl. But I guarantee you, if you had a girl who was made frum by Bnei Akiva, look, I'll tell you a story out of Israel. There's a man, Gamliel. I believe he worked for the Jewish agency. I hope he's alive. He was crippled. He lived in my building for a short while. I knew this man. And a Taimani. I was overwhelmed. He davens for a moment. His Ivra is more Ashkenazis than mine. Totally. So I once asked him, I said, you're a Taimani. He said, don't you understand, I was raised in Tel Aviv. My father was frum. My father said to me, the only way you're going to be frum is if you go to Bnei Akiva. And he sent all the kids to Bnei Akiva. He says, I became an Ashkenazi, religiously. Now, what do you say to that man? I couldn't get over it. He could daven, you might think he stepped out of the shtetl in Lithuania. And I don't know, my inclination tells me, and I never discussed it with the Rav, but I would say to Rebbe, I have a Davida Pardo. A girl, Davida. NCSY made her frum. She now learns in Jerusalem in Nishmat. And she came to me and said, Rebbe, all my life, from the time I became frum at the age of 14, I've lived like an Ashkenaziyah. Now I find out there are big differences. You know, brachas on a mitzvah, it's a big shaila. Brach levatala, big shaila. I would tell her, this is the way you've lived, continue. Okay? Yud Beit Sharim Shakvali. That's what he answers. He answers beautifully. Says, don't consider the preacher off the path. Know that it's a big machlokes, we shine him. Now, Here he has Ayin Dalet, a fabulous question. This question comes up today time and time again. I have in my book the following story. In my new book, I should say, because my other books are pure scholarship. I have the following story. It was a young rabbi. My second shtetl, 1962, but where I was much more successful than my first shtetl, where I remained in my office hangs the invitation to the farewell party when we went in on Leon 69, the shoemaker breakfast. So, right after I began, within a year, a Chabadnik, Reb Shmuel Pesach Bogomilsky, arrived at the end of Newark, Valesburg section, Mount Sinai congregation. So he was rabbi there, and I was rabbi about 7-8 blocks into Maplewood, which was a suburb, a very fancy suburb at the time. Maplewood, South Orange, was one of the wealthiest there. In 1962, according to Fortune magazine, South Orange was the 7th wealthiest community in America, and Maplewood was the 15th. And it was like an integrated community with one big high school, Columbia High School, which literally was on the border between South Orange and Maplewood, one block from where the shul, where our shul was. So Shmuel Pesach and I became very close. And we used to run joint programs, joint adult education. And one time in a Shabbos morning, I had to consult with him to work out what we were going to do so I would know what to announce in shul. So I go to his house, davening was 9 o'clock, I go to his house about 8:15, and I come in and there he is, cup of coffee, blueberry pie, another cup of coffee. Wife was a fabulous baker, Yehudita, apple pie. I say, Shmuel Pesach, what's with you? By the way, he came from Litvish stock, big Litvish Talmidei Chachamim, but his father died young. I believe he was named for his father. In other words, he never saw his father. I believe his name was, I'm pretty sure I'm right. If he's listening or someone's listening, you can correct me. Harav Shmuel Pesach ben Harav Shmuel Pesach, and his mother remarried a Chabadnik. And the kids were raised Chabad. He says, what do you mean? Of course we eat. Medafavim keich said that you need koach to daven. And then he said to me the immortal lines. I'll tell you the difference between us siddim to you mitnachdim. We eat to daven, you daven to eat. Quote, end quote. Again, Menachem, we eat to daven, you daven to eat. All right? He gave me a lesson in... He gave me a lesson in Hasidic thinking. Now, fine. I think you all agree that al tochlu al adam, al tochlu kodem shitit palalu al dimchem. As far as I recall, it's a Gemara, Boten Brachat and Sanhedrin. You have to pray for your blood before you eat. All right, I don't want to say there's no heter if a person's sick, a person feels weak, so you're allowed to have a bite. All right, but normative halacha, we don't eat before davening. Tell me, what about lulav and etrog? Minhag Yisrael is, and by the way, I don't do this. I go into the sukkah. I'm in my house. I have a sukkah right off my living room, but lately I've been in a hotel. I go down to the hotel sukkah. The hotel I was in the last year, you know, that Netanyahu met there with Tony Blair and with the UN representative, and Shin Bet was there, and they're looking at me in the sukkah, 7 o'clock in the morning, and they knew me already. I waved to them, you know, invited them in to check the sukkah, because they, you know, have to, what they call a sterile area. They have to take an area and fence it off that they know there's no bomb in that area before the big wigs come in, which was only about 9:30. So the first thing I did, I make a bracha, lulav and etrog. But Minhag Yisrael is, you see people make the bracha right before Hallel. So now you have Yontif Davening. Yontif Davening begins later. Yontif Davening has many more mizmorim. Yontif Davening takes longer. What about a person who says, if I'm not geschwacht, I'm weak, can I eat before I take lulav and etrog? Tell me, where did you face that problem this year? You know, Rosh Hashanah. Are you allowed to make Kiddush before Tkiyat HaShofar? Mendel, what did you do here in BMT, in Bris, whatever the building is called today? What did you know? Who was here? Who remembers? When I learned in Lakewood, they had a Kiddush, and then they began Musaf. It was a full day affair where I davened with my grandchildren on Rehov, right off Rehov Palmach, make Kiddush. I believe in Gris Rabbi Miller Paskins not to make Kiddush. Am I right or wrong? Nope. Do you remember or not? Everyone's looking at me like I'm asking you about Shanghai, about Mao Zedong or Chiang Kai-shek, ancient history.
I think we did not.
You did not. I know that, Rabbi. That's a tremendous machloket. It's the very similar. And on the other hand, to go the whole day and not to eat and to work, I got to tell you, Siddim Arayt, you wind up davening Musaf and Musaf on Rosh Hashanah. What a Musaf that is. What a davening. People would ask me, Rebbe, where's the best book to teach me about Yiddishkeit, the history of the Jews? I say, the best book, open up Shmon Esrei of Rosh Hashanah, take a nice English translation, and you study the Malkiot Shofrat, Zichronot Shofrat, and you'll be the most educated Jew in the world. No, could you imagine you're davening and you have the Shofar and the Rabnet? I used to blow Shofar, Salon Shmon Esrei. It was one of my innovations because I wanted the people to daven with Kavanah. And that way, if they have to wait for the rabbi, the chassan had to wait for me, and I would signal him, I would stop shuckling. When I finished the Malkiot, they blew Shofar. Okay, when I finished the Zichronot, they blew Shofar. When I finished the Shofrat, they blew Shofar. It took a while, but we got there. But do you eat, don't you eat? And this is the question. So he deals with this as a long tshuva, and he says, Me'ika hadin, before you do a mitzvah, you're not supposed to eat. You're supposed to do the mitzvah. But he says that here where you first reach the lulav and etrog, and it's long after shacharit, it's before Hallel, it's a long davening, shelo yachlu kodem shiyitpalulu, and he quotes the Gemara, and he says, maybe here if a person feels they have to have something light, they would be permitted. And he says, all that we could allow, and this is normative, utam lishtot v'litom davar muat, aval lo pat, no bread. You can't have a regular breakfast. And then he says, with lulav and etrog, there's certainly an etzah, because no one says you have to take lulav and etrog in the middle of davening before Hallel. You should be able to take lulav and etrog right after you wake up. So he says to this, the people asking the question, that if you want to eat and you feel you have to eat and you can't wait for such a long davening, lachatchila, take the lulav and etrog, and then you can have a little snack, but you can't be koveya suda. And all right, I don't know whether we would disagree with this psak. Ein hachinamim. Lachatchila, we don't eat before davening. B'di'evid, there is ample sources, yesh hamilis moch, that if a person feels he can't concentrate and he'll feel weak and he has to take medicine, there can be many reasons why we can matir a person to have a little bite before davening. I want to go on record, however, that sometimes I'm shocked at the hotels. I've seen hotels where they serve food around the clock. This is particularly true in the United States. People go away for Pesach, people go away for Sukkot, mainly Pesach, and I've seen people eat a full breakfast before davening. And you might think that they're going to starve right after davening. There's a kiddush. Right after the kiddush, there's an unbelievable meal. Right after the meal, the tea room with every type of candy and cake and soda and drink. Right after that, when davening mincha, you take a nap, 4 o'clock again. And then, nach Shabbos, or that night, another tremendous meal. And it's like chok v'lo ya'amar. People have to have
it.
So you pay for it, but you finish alone. The stomach is limited.
You know, in the Catskills, they used to have a Yiddish song about people sitting on the rocking chair, and they sit on the rocking chair back and forth. All of a sudden, the announcement becomes here. They are eating, and everybody gets up and they go back. Then they come back to the rocking chair. They sit again. Let me share with you
a Peru story. I want to finish up this too, but let me share with you a story. Rav Shvagn used to say, when you're maskinish kachat in the middle of a shir, you have to say it. It's hashkacha pratit. What you just reminded me. 21 years ago, right before Purim, a dear Talmud of mine got married. He married, you understand, into a Hasidic family. The family, wonderful family, and I went from Israel, was out of condition. It was not easy. I think I've told you, the mother of the bride, she was widowed, and there were so many great Rashi Yeshiva there, and Rabbanim there, and Chassidic Rebbeim, and Gabayim, the Kesavna Rebbe's Gabay, and a guy is Masada Kedushin without a beard, without anything. And she, I have to tell you, I'm very makatov with Rabbanim Soloveitchik, because he found out that she was a little upset, and he called her right before, the night before the wedding, and told her, I don't want to repeat what I was told he said, but he said some nice things about the guy who was coming from Jerusalem, the Sadeh Kedushim. Fine. I want to tell you, the wedding was held in one of the finest hotels in this city, if not the finest. I cannot tell you the opulence, the luxury. Oh, wow, it's like the Beis HaMikdash. Ein aniyot b'makom ashira. In the Beis HaMikdash, even the animals ate out of beautiful, beautiful utensils. I don't have to tell you, there was a mechitza up to the sky between the men and women. And they served the smorgasbord, and then they served the meal, kisudat shleima hamelech b'shaito. And then they announced in the lobby, the Viennese table is ready. The rush to that Viennese table, just like Yitzchak said, I will never forget, on two levels. Mir geht kentrachting, and the Yidden haben nicht gegessen, 40 Jahre gewinnen mitbar, gehungert. We can imagine 40 years they were in the desert, they were starving. But not only that, here you had a tremendous mechitza. Here you had everything in accordance with Hasidic minhag. And suddenly, for the Viennese table, the shekels were flying, the men and women pushing, jostling, grabbing. Oh my. So Baruch Hashem, this is food. These are the hotels. Halacha l'maaser, if you're young and have the strength, you don't eat before davening. Lulav and etrog, if you want, take it before davening, after shachris, run out, what do they call it, a kiddush club, make a quick kiddush, so you have the energy to continue davening. Sukkos is not a problem, particularly in Israel. Davening here is always quick. It's not a social hall, the synagogue. The problem is Shaifa on Rosh Hashanah, and there you have a real problem. And there's a machloket taposkim, and I come from a world that was noheg lahakel. We made kiddush, and it was the litvish minhag, better to daven with a little food in you, so you don't have to concentrate on food, but you can concentrate on the meaning of the shofar, the meaning of the Shmoneh Esrei. So Yitzchak, in Boston, what did they do?
I don't know what they do in Beit Yosef and Shimoni Street.
Yeah.
They have a kiddush, and then they have the shofar.
All right, so that's what we're saying. But I believe in Grus, they do not run it that way because Rav David is Chayshesh L'chubra. Now, he gets involved here once he talks about the Lulav and Etrog. I'll end off with this. I'll give you the very fascinating topic. Gili, did you ever daven in a Yemenite shul? Tell me, describe to me the Lulav they take on Sukkot. Okay, tremendous lulav. Describe the etrog. Five times the size of our etrog. Fine, there's pictures. Every year in Maariv and Yediot, you'll see pictures of a Yemenite etrog weighing 10 kilos. All right, beautiful. Tell me, how many hadassim do they take? Did you ever see that, Ephraim? How many hadassim do you take? Three. Right or wrong? No, are you allowed to take a big bunch of hadassim?
Or is it about Moser?
Is it about Tosef or is it Hidur HaMitzvah?
The question is, are they allowed to take yours?
What do you mean take yours? No, the first day you mean, L'chachtam L'chem B'yom HaRishon, you have to own it. You have to own it. That's true. That's true. But you own it. It's your Abba bought it for you. It's yours. You bought it. Your Saba gave it to you. But the question is, three, or they take, what do they take, a bunch, 10, 20? Gentlemen, a very interesting question. And you look into the Rambam Hilchot Lulav, Perik Shvi, Halacha Bet, and you'll see the Rambam describes the mitzvah, and he describes here how the hadassim have to be mishulashim, and if you look into the Ravid, you'll see what I'm talking about. In Halacha Zion, he asked the question, Kamenobu mehem, lulav echad, etrog echad, shnei batei arava, ushlosha batei hadas. V'yim, Ratzala Hosifan Hadas, Kideshe Tiye Agudagdola Mosif Vnoi Mitzvah Hu. Avoshachaminim ain Mosifan Almanyanim, the ain Gorim Mechem, the Yim Hosifu Gara Pasal. Very interesting psak of the Rambam, that when, and this is why the Yemenites do it. It's based upon an open Rambam, and the Yemenites live in accordance with the Rambam. When it comes to the Hadassim, you can add all you want. It is not a psul. Everything else, if you have too many or too little, it's lo tigra, lo tosif, you're not yobsei. Hadassim, all you want. Gentlemen, this raises a very simple question. Why Hadassim? What is the Rambam saying? What's wrong? So, I'll take 10 Arava too. Why can't I? A whole machloket follows. Logically speaking, Lulav and Etrog, somehow you can understand all right, it's limited to one. A little bit easier to understand. If you can be mosif in hadassim, why not a ravat? Gentlemen, if we take the Rambam that I just read to you at face value, could be the answer is that to be mosif in hadassim is hidur mitzvah. It looks nicer. A rabbi. not as beautiful as Hadassim. Right or wrong, just think. Hiddur mitzvah. Nothing else can be Hiddur mitzvah except the Hadassim. If we take the Rambam at face value. Look into the Kesef Mishnah, quotes Tshuva to Rambam, Shehu Katar for Sof Yamav, that he wrote at the end of his life, and the Rambam changed his mind. You can take as many Arabat as you want as well. Ein Hachinami. What's good for the cat is good for the dog. How does that expression go? What's good for the mice? Well, what does it go? Good for the mice?
Goose and the gander.
Goose and the gander, mice and the cat. If it's good, lahabdil, for the hadassim, it's good for the arabat. Fascinating. And yet, lahalacha, unless someone can inform me otherwise, I have never seen Jews taking more than two arabat, but I have seen Jews taking entire bunches of hadassim. So I want to tell you.
So what is the
Besom Rabbah? He speaks about the fact that the Hadassim have to be Meshulashim, and he also speaks about the fact that you can take a whole bunch of Hadassim, but be sure that the kosher Hadassim stand out, the ones that are Meshulashim, because those are the ones you are going to be yotzei with. So it's a very fascinating tshuva on lulav and etrog, on eating before, and how to take it. He makes reference to the Rambam, and once again I have to say, no one in the world would disagree with the Besamim Rosh. So my dear students, I have a drop more to go, but you have to admit that today I'm showing you let me use a baseball analogy with all due respects to Rabbi Rubin, but the baseball season is upon us. He slipped a lot of curveballs. Today, they were simple fastballs that he was throwing. You follow? There's not much that can mislead you today. Today, Michael walks away, he's normative, he's fine, he's good. The curveballs, the change of paces. Do you know baseball yet, Ephraim? All your years in America and you didn't learn baseball? Oh my gosh, the Maitre de Eloy will rebuke you. Did you hear my hesped on Joe DiMaggio? Did you read my new book? I quote the Maitre de Eloy at the end of the first chapter. Believe me.
When you went to a baseball game?
Yitzchak, if you want, I'll lend you the first chapter to read. I give you the
took him to a baseball game.
The nature of the English was a lot deeper than just going to a baseball game. But anyway, the chains of paces and the curveballs were not in today's examples. I'll give you a few more next week, and then I show you the tremendous attack, the counterattack, who led it, what happened, what they found fault with. Let me tell you, I have taught many interesting topics in my life, never as interesting as what we have and what we are rolling into. So we did a selection today, mainly from Orach Chaim, Mila, and Lulav, and Etrog, and Chazanim, and Yom Narayim, and women and the whole problem. That's a major area. Birchat HaMitzvot Aseh Shazman Grama. Tomorrow, Be'ezrat Hashem, as I told you, it's $1 million to my students throughout the generations who challenged me and made me think. You'll see what I have to present tomorrow. In the meantime, Yitzchak, this is for you. I want to tell you, if anyone wants to hear an Afro-American who gave a talk that is halavai, our leaders here, Peres and Netanyahu, would speak the way this man spoke, and I am very proud. He is the mayor of Newark, Cory Booker, and he was turned into an appreciation for Judaism when he studied at Oxford. under Shmuley Bokeach. So if anyone is interested, this is the website to find them on. It's a 7-minute selection from a Chabad speech.
He was honored by YU.
Honored by
Gary. He's the president of the club, no?
He was honored by YU. I understand that at the Hanukkah dinner, he was holding by, he would be president of the United States. You want to see what the Israeli army is today? This is the worker of the year getting a special award. They interview him. What is his favorite sefer? Tehillim, with the Chafetz Chaim's commentary and stories about the Chafetz Chaim. This is B'Machaneh, the Army magazine.
The worker of the year?
Yeah, the worker of the year. Yossi Sarusi, 45. What an individual, what a family, and what a sincere worker. This is another issue. There is our new chief of staff, Gantz, and I couldn't believe what's going on in this issue. This is about an army family. He's a career officer. Take a look, the children, the kippah, the dedication, the Yiddishkeit. Ashrei Ayin Ra'ata Zot. And what else did I have here? There's one other thing that was overwhelming. Here it is. One other thing. Here is the career officer in this issue. Take a look. Yiddishkeit, Torah, commitment, dedication. This is why I am optimistic, not pessimistic. These I can't give out. It goes on to a different branch of my family, where one kid after another, Kanaim Hara, is going up Hezder into the army. So I wanted to show you, but I've got to pass it on Purim. And it's not a Purim joke, but we're making our own family minion for Purim. So Baruch Hashem, we will be Yotzei Megillah. I will allow the grandchildren one turn on the Graga, but not to go crazy. That's the way my wife was raised in Ramaz. One turn on the Graga. And finally, is the tape still on?
Yes.
We want to welcome Matan, who just finished basic training, and we want to salute him and tell him to enjoy his week off until he gets back to the rigor of army life. Until we meet again tomorrow morning in health and happiness. Das Vedanya. When it's